Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. We were on earlier today, but we had a little confusion there because Marion Jacobs, the psychosocial therapist, our guest, our Wednesday guest, was not able to receive the invitation in time. So we scheduled for 1:30 instead of 1. As I was saying earlier today, though, with the Christmas holidays, with all these holidays coming up, there's going to be so many people who are going to be severely depressed, especially those behind the walls, especially those who have lost loved ones. And I just want everyone to try to stay encouraged through the holidays and try to welcome others into your hearts and your lives and try to think about all of these people who are either behind the prison walls, in their homes, those who have lost loved ones, those who are homeless and on the streets, but also think about those who may be right now, as we're having this radio show, contemplating suicide or homicide because they cannot cope. This is a very sad time of the year because holidays like this usually cause more people to start becoming psychologically affected and depressed. So we're going to welcome our guest once again, as all of you know, most of you know anyway, Marion Jacobs, psychosocial therapist from the Netherlands, who does a lot of research, a lot of education into the lives, the psychological lives, and the personal lives of so many people. So let's welcome our guest, Marion Jacobs. Marion, are you on with us?
Hello, Leona. Yes, I'm here. Thank you for inviting me again.
As always, thank you.
You're welcome.
So I am really sorry that you were unable to get that invitation in time. And I did make note of it and send a message to the administration of the radio show to let them know that this has been a problem in the past as well. And I'm sorry that I had to reschedule. I know your time is valuable. But once again, we finally got you on. And again, if you can, just let the audience know a little bit about what you do and your experiences in some of the cases that you've had with people behind the prison walls and in the communities.
Yes, I work with incarcerated people in my own country, that's the Netherlands, and I work according a approach that I call deeper justice, because I find it important to meet the human being behind the crime and go with him, seek with him to insights in what led to the crime and what happened while that person committed the crime, in order to get to more self-insight and healing insight and responsibility, the development of responsibility towards the victims, because the victims are also, of course, a part of the whole story. I'm writing my thesis, that's also my book, about the United States prison system and how the system is founded in the political situation, in the economic situation and culture. I dive deeper into it. I go beyond the things that are well known on the surface in order to understand why we have this large amount of people behind bars, 2.3 million people. That's a lot. And also because I do not understand why people have to be reunited into the system in a developed country which calls itself a democracy in the West. So I want to try to understand all these things and connect wires that are linked to the system. And so I hope to publish my book in spring next year. And I hope to graduate and for my study philosophy. And that's for now my story.
We're really looking forward to it. I've been waiting for the book to come out so that I can read it. It's taken a lot of research. It's taken a lot of hard work, I'm sure, in what you've done to write this book. Marion, these holidays now, I was just talking about the situation where around these holidays becomes so sad in addition to everything else that's going on in the world. Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on how it's going to be affecting people, those in the streets, those who have lost loved ones, those who are behind the prison walls? what we can expect in these cases?
Well, the holidays like Christmas and New Year, in those holidays, the, you know, the family, the part of family connection, love for your loved ones, that's very emphasized. And so the distinction, you know, people inside the prison system, they will feel extra hard that they are disconnected from their loved ones. And another thing is that we have to keep in mind that prison time is completely different from the time that we are used to in the free world. People in the prison, they don't, there is nothing in the prison system that reminds them of the time, this time of the year. For them, it's just another day that, you know, in which they have to survive, in which they are dehumanized. There's no change for them. And somewhere they feel, of course, that, you know, the difference with the outside world, where the people, you know, seek each other, put on a tree, a Christmas tree, and all that. They will feel them, you know, they will feel very abandoned in that, inside themselves, and that might lead to to despair or depression, loneliness. It's a very difficult time. And also for the loved ones outside who wants to be, with their loved one inside, and it's impossible. And what I find also sad about it is it has to do with the corporal power. I got an email this morning from JPay with offers to send Christmas cards to the system. So even, you know, the corporations take advantage of this very painful time to make money. And that's extra sad for me.
I think it's terrible. It really is.
It's disgusting.
Order for families or friends to send gifts to the loved ones, some even with secure access. Some prisons are allowing the gifts and or foods or whatever, and others aren't. And nowadays, with so many people wrongfully convicted, first-time offenders, I mean, everybody is getting life and life without parole sentences. And that in itself, around these holidays, thinking about there's no end to what they're going through, it must be even more painful. And my thing is, years ago, life without parole and life sentences weren't like it is today. You know, people are out now that that had committed fatal, you know, capital crimes and everything else. And they're out today. They've been out for years and years. They never got life sentences. And now the prisons are full of people with life and life without parole sentencing. And it's sad because this country has so many suicides that have occurred in the prisons throughout the country. And this time of the year is even worse because not only are they going to be depressed as it is, but also they're looking at no end in sight for them.
I think the most difficult thing is for me that all this is arranged. All this serves a goal. Full prisons, you know, the prison system is, I think, the second or the third, how do you say that, for labor. Employer. Not prisons for profit. It's like with the prison labor, when prisons are full and a lot of companies are sure that they have cheap labor, access to cheap labor. So that's, I think, the problem, that it serves a goal. It's intentionally, you have mass incarceration and it's intentionally, it's not an accident or whatever. Conscious choice, excluding people and locking them up, because even when you look at how people are convicted, that such a high number of people, you know, they agree with a plea bargain, which means that they never see justice done. if I put the whole picture together, then it has nothing to do with justice, but it all, you know, it has mostly to do with money and corporations and all that, big money, and even politics have benefit of mass incarceration.
You're right about that.
That's a picture beyond what we want. You know, you have to ask yourself, for how many years are organizations trying to reach prison reform? Of course, there might be some successes, and in some states, prisons are a little bit better than in other states. But on the whole, for so many years, organizations fight for prison reform, and there is still mass incarceration, and people still are in solitary confinement for months or even for years. And so mass incarceration serves a goal and is there in the benefit for, you know, certain groups, certain parties. Otherwise, it would not exist. And that's the whole thing. There are two agendas. You know, the organizations want prison reform, and on the other hand, you have, you know, politics and economy that wants to keep the prisons full. That's, you know, that's an opposite, what you see.
You know, I and would...
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, go ahead, please.
No, go. No, I was finished. I wanted to listen to you.
I just often wonder if these people that come up with these policies and these people that do these things, what it would be like for them if it was in their family, if they had to go through what they put these people through. You know, it's so ridiculous that they have no compassion at all, no understanding, no type of sympathy to what's going on in this country, the way they treat these people like animals. And it just hasn't happened to them. And I don't know how they can live with themselves.
Well, I think they don't treat them as animals, but they treat them as objects, because they are better for animals. If they see an animal suffering, you know, their heart goes to it, and they want, you know, they feel compassion. But an inmate, and then I'm talking about the label inmate. An inmate, if you turn a human life into an object, or the label inmate in this case, then there is no compassion, because they don't see inmates as human beings. And that's why, you know, staff or others, they don't care. They only see the inmate, and the inmate is a bad person because the inmate committed a crime, and the only thing they want to do is take revenge. But that's the endless circle of revenge. And we know it doesn't work, because that's why you have mass incarceration and a high number of recidivism. I mean, if revenge would work, then you would not have all these problems. And turning a human being into an object, I think that's true evil, because every human being, whether he has committed a crime or not, every living form, whether it's a human being, an animal, a tree, or a plant, or whatever, every living form contains sacred life. Life is sacred, life in itself. And turning life into an object means that you cross this line of sacredness. And for me, that's true evil. And that's what's happening on a great scale in the United States prisons. Sacred life is devastated. And that's for me evil, true evil. And that's why I feel connected to it too, because there might be people who listen to this show and think, why is a Dutch woman talking about the United States prison system? But I feel that we all live on the same planet. We all are from the same race, and that is the human race. And so I feel concerned.
And I thank you for that, because you can talk about it, because you've been here. You've been in the American prison, and you've also volunteered in the prisons where you are. And you've also taken it upon yourself to understand, to research into the penal system and to understand. So anyone that says, why would this Dutch woman be talking about these issues, they themselves need to get out there and do the same thing. Because it's a shame when we have people from other countries so focused on the inhumane conditions in the United States prisons, so focused on what's going on in this country. When this country has mass incarcerations, no other country has mass incarcerations. So anyone that would ever say, why is this Dutch woman, or even like with Franz Kurz, why would this German be talking about our prisons? It's very pitiful to know that we live in a society in this country that cannot do the same thing. There's no reason why there should be mass incarcerations. You mentioned earlier about the plea bargaining, which is another really, really serious problem. Because as you mentioned before, and others have mentioned, people who are innocent, wrongfully convicted, are given no other choice but to plea bargain. They either go to prison for long, long lengths of time, or they plea bargain and get a lesser sentencing, even when they're innocent, which causes the problem. Because once they are in agreement to plea bargaining, then that is on them. That's labeling them as the offender that committed a crime they did not commit. So that is another serious problem in my books, that they are forced to plea bargain in order to fight for themselves, for their freedom when they're wrongfully convicted.
And many times it's the people who cannot pay for the bail that have to agree with the... Yeah, so they cannot pay bail because it's too, the amount of bail is too high. So they cannot, find proof and go to the free world and, you know, arrange their proof of innocence. So they have to agree with the plea bargain in order to, you know, to get a shorter sentence. And yeah, that all has to do with money, and it all has to do with negotiating. It has nothing to do with a court. But the Sixth Amendment says that every single person has the right of a judge and a process in court. That's what's written in the Sixth Amendment, and it goes against this amendment. And that's the same with the bail. If you look at the Eighth Amendment, it says that excessive amounts of money for bail is forbidden. But it is happening. You know, it is. So the bail thing is going against the Eighth Amendment. And then there is the danger of the 13th Amendment. We all know the exception in the 13th Amendment that says, you know, slavery is forbidden unless you have committed a crime. Then you become slave of the state. And that's abused in the earlier days, when they talked about the war against, the war of crime and the war against drugs. That was an abuse of the exception of the 13th Amendment.
Wow.
So what you see in the communities, you see a lot of ignorance. People do not really exactly know what is happening. And if you have no loved one inside the prison system, you might never think about it because, you know, it's not your thing. It doesn't happen in your life. So many people in the communities are simply ignorant. But on top, you see the rich people, especially politicians, corporations that know exactly how it works, and they can maintain this mechanism because the people in the communities are ignorant. And when people are ignorant, they don't protest. You know, they keep silence. So that's why you can maintain mass incarceration. People have to become aware. That's why you do the radio show every week, and that's important. You know. Writing books, doing shows, talking about it on YouTube. There are, you know, these lectures from Chris Hedges, Noam Chomsky, more of these people. who are not on the privatized TV stations and radio stations, but they are on YouTube, and they explain how it works. And they also say the only thing that you can do is trying to bring awareness so that people become less ignorant, because ignorance is a danger, because then people don't know what they are talking about.
You know, as they say, people don't, they either don't care because it hasn't happened to them. The lightning hasn't struck their homes yet with their loved ones, or they just don't know enough about it. And I don't see how people cannot know enough about it when there's been so much coming out about it, talk about it all the time. And a lot of times when I see that people are not getting more involved in helping these prisoners, and the reason I say this is because you and I both know that we have an epidemic in this country of mental illnesses and addictions. We talk about it all the time. And they're, instead of treating them in residential facilities, they're throwing them in prisons like cattle. So if people know that these people have psychological issues going on in their lives, many of them were traumatized as young children themselves. If people know this and they're not willing to help, then they're part of the problem. They're probably part of the reason why we have mass incarcerations in this country, because they don't look at these prisoners as being traumatized victims before becoming offenders. And they don't look at these prisoners as people as being wrongfully convicted. They look at these people as being hardcore criminals, when in fact they were traumatized as children. They were, a lot of them, coming from abusive homes. That's why we had the social services and Children's Protective Services, because so many kids have been abused and beaten. Lawrence Drink, he has the radio show on Sunday afternoons. Lawrence Drink, he was a child that was abused by his own mother. He ended up in 25 or more foster homes, and then eventually ended up in prison for 22 years. And now he's out. He's doing his radio shows, trying to bring awareness to the public, while at the same time we're getting an echo.
Hello?
Well, yes. Well, at the same time, he founded the Legacy Program and also Each One Teach One.
Yeah,
there's a lot of noise.
He has experienced himself and, you know, the human being he was, and how things can go wrong in life, and how you can restore yourself again.
But
what you see, I think, in nowadays, the current American culture, and I'm not talking about everyone, but I, you know, when I look in general, there is a lot of exclusion in your country. It's not only the incarcerated people, they are a part of it, but it's also the homeless people. You know, what you see in your country is that services like mental services, psychiatric hospitals, you know, but also healthcare, education, it's there and it's high quality, but it's not accessible for the regular man or woman. It's all privatized. Education is privatized. If I want to study on your university, I cannot pay for it. But I am currently studying in my own country in a university. I have to pay some money, but I can easily pay it, and I'm not a rich person. I'm just moderate, you know. So, and what you see in Norway, sometimes we talk about Norway, the perfect, the people in Norway chose to pay more taxes in order to get all these services accessible for everyone. It means that the whole country is well educated, which means that people think different. They think more nuanced. They don't judge. They think further. And they all agree to give everybody a chance, also people who have committed a crime. There are prisons in Norway, and people do have to do time. But the time they have to do is filled with rehabilitation. And it's not only for the incarcerated individual, it's also for society itself. You know, in the past, years ago, there was this man, what was his name? He killed about 100 young people, was in Norway. He was radicalized. And he got incarcerated, of course, and he has, what was his name? Well, doesn't matter. He has a life sentence, but a life sentence in Norway means that you have 25 years, and you get, after that you get examined, and also during these 25 years you get examined. And if he has changed, developed himself, is de-radicalized, then it might be an opportunity that he gets released. If not, if he stays dangerous, then he has to stay in prison, of course. But the people in society, and those were the parents of the victims, because he killed young people, 100 or 150 young people, so it's a huge crime. But they asked the parents what they thought about the sentence, and they said, well, everybody needs another, has a right for another chance. And they said also, if this man was capable of committing this crime, we as a community, as a society, we also have to look at ourselves and to see what made it for him possible to commit this crime in our society. What do we have to do better in order to prevent people from doing this? That's another perspective. That's not only, you know, finger pointing to one person and saying, oh, you are bad, you have to be incarcerated for the rest of your life, hell to you, etc. But it's, you know, daring to look at yourself, you know, self-reflection. And what I miss, and I think that's very important, what I miss in the United States prison system is self-reflection in the communities, in politics, staff in prisons. What can we do better? Why does it, you know, because we all know that mass incarceration, when you look at incarcerated people, we know that mass incarceration doesn't work. We know that revenge doesn't work. That's why we still have the same problems as years ago. So we have, you see these same problems, you know, in the 50s, it was maybe 53 or 1954, I don't know, but in the 50s, there was already scientific evidence that solitary confinement longer than 15 days damages the brain. You know, they could see it on x-rays. Still, there is this solitary confinement for months or years. Why? That's the question. There's evidence. You shouldn't do it. Still, it's maintained. Who benefits from it? That's the question. Who benefits from dehumanization? Who benefits from locking up people in solitary confinement for years while we know it is damaging? Because it's proven.
We have a caller, 406. Do you want to state your name, please, and what you would have to say?
My name is Maurice Piper from Wyoming.
Hello.
I guess,
welcome.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I guess we're talking right now. What I just chimed in on was incarceration or in second chances, I guess. Is that kind of what's being said right now? And,
yeah.
So I guess,
and the nuances of it.
And I'm sorry, what else?
And the nuances of it, because it's very nuanced, of course.
Right.
The issues.
Okay, so relevant issue, I guess. Being incarcerated, I guess, is, I'm not sure how to start that. I don't know. I guess I've been there, raised on a system. Given second chances for them, for me, was it was just, stick him in a cage, and then hopefully he'll reform to society when he comes home. And they give you options in there. This is the thing. They give you options in there. You can work. You can go to school. You can better yourself while you're there, you know. And taking advantage of all of those is one thing. And then the flip side of that is any kind of aggression or any kind of anger, instead of trying to address it, they put you back into a situation where you're in a hole. You're locked down hours of the day. You're not getting any casing with people to try to rehabilitate yourself and understand why you're doing wrong. And for me, when I was locked down inside of there, it was a lot of reflection. Of course, I'm not the typical, go out there and just cause violence kind of person. So me sitting in there wasn't really affecting me more than just damaging my soul and just stifling me as far as me trying to rehabilitate myself. In there, there's people of all colors and races, as everybody knows. So adapting and trying to get yourself to a second chance is hard, because the system inside is built to kind of keep you housed, get you incarcerated, and then you become comfortable there. I found myself on the streets for a while there. I had trouble with alcoholism, of course. It's just hard, because once you reach that state where you're completely got no communication skills, you are a felon, and getting second chances from these people, it's hard. And then so going to jail for me from the streets was easy, because I got comfortable inside of a prison system, got comfortable inside of 3 meals a day, and they're not teaching me how to move forward, I guess. And then so finding out all these tools myself, it's taken a lifetime. I'm almost 40 years old now, and I can honestly say I spent not even no more than solidly 10 years with my family here. And of course, I'm not blaming the system, because I made my own choices. But once I'm inside of the system, instead of trying to reach me when I was 19 years old, when I was that young kid still, trying to figure out left, right, up, down, because I didn't have no idea. I didn't have no direction. This system has been raising me since I was, basically 14. Then I got in trouble real big when I was 19. Oh, and I'm 40 now. In about 6 months, I'll be 40.
What is your first name again?
I'm sorry. My name is Maurice.
It's people like yourselves that we really want to come on the show, because you've been there, you've done it, and you can let the audience know exactly what goes on inside. And so many people at a young age, they stay under the age of 25 years of age. People are still growing, and they don't realize it. They don't realize that people do make mistakes. So I'm glad you're on the
right
show talking about these things, because that's what we need to hear right from the mouth of those who have actually been there and done it and turned
right
their lives around.
Yeah, and I guess, and like things like this radio show, and like, back when it was, the youth kind of needed it and still does, I guess. We were looking for outlets, I want to say, about a year before I got incarcerated. And I couldn't find it. Honestly, I couldn't find it on the Native American side, and I couldn't find it on the white side. I couldn't find it in black culture or any kind of culture out there. I couldn't find somebody that understood me, understood me growing up on the reservation, living in a city. So I don't talk the same as a Native American on the reservation, and I grew up there. I don't talk the same when I go to the society that's white or black or Mexican or any other race. They don't understand me, because I don't fit into their criteria. Okay, so I find a place that I do fit in, that I can speak clearly and I can understand that. But then again, right after that, they see tattoos, they see my criminal record. Okay, so once they got all of that in place, then what's left but my voice? Okay, so once the voice is there, it's hard to just to be a voice, because people want to put a name to that, to what they're hearing. And for me, asking for help or trying to get an understanding of what's going on in this world, I was overlooked. I was put to the side. I was even by my own people, because they felt like, I guess I was just not following the same road as everybody else. And only because I didn't understand it, I didn't have, and honestly, I didn't take the time to sit down and listen to my people, and I should have done that, but I didn't. But nobody was, on the same note, nobody was right next to me like, you need to learn this because this is very vital. I had to learn those traits kind of my own growing up, seeing proud warriors throughout history, my ancestors who, were sacrificed and survived for us to be here. So learning my history and my roots was kind of spotty here and there, but it was important that I did learn it. And once I did learn it, it was like me understanding my people and knowing them, still I wasn't accepted in that way, you know, and with the white race also, with every other race, it's just, it was really hard for me, and it still is today.
I don't know if you've had a chance to meet or talk with Lawrence Drink, or if you had a chance to be on his show, the founder of the Legacy Program, Each One Teach One, but he's on the air with us as well now, and he's gone through what you've gone through as far as incarceration. So I would love to have you two connect, and we do have Chinupa Guhamani's on, who I'd like to have come on at some point in time to talk as well, because he also is well experienced and knowledgeable in these areas as well. And then we have a call of 720 on with us. And there's a lot of noise behind, so I'm going to keep him on mute or her on mute for now. But Lawrence, can you say a few words too? Are you on with
sure.
Us?
So, thank you. It's thank so you good for to hear up. You. Always. So my name is Lawrence Drink. Everyone knows me as Sparky Lee. I'm the founder and CEO of Legacy Programs Education Reentry. And I've been through the same thing. Grew up in a system, got angry, and figured to do something out. Figure something out about it. And I figure my philosophy on what we're all going through is that it takes us to go back. It takes somebody that's lived in that world to expose it for the truth. That are a reality that people shove to the side out here. And, you know, what the brother was talking about right now is the dehumanization of taking away the humanity from somebody. And it's the same thing that's happened in history. They just found a legal way to enslave us. And it's legal slavery. It's a way to control the population, to put fear into the population, to thrive off of the fear of the community, and to sit there and say that what they're doing is good, and in all reality, what they're doing is it's a lucrative business. You know, the only thing they're not doing is putting us up on a platform and selling us off. So, that's my take on that. But you know, the brothers and sisters out there that have endured this and that are coming out and being powerful speakers, not only, you know, are you being that voice, but you're giving the voice back to those and giving them permission to speak, to sit there and say, it's okay. And everything the brother was saying right now, I completely, wholeheartedly agree. And, you know, it's a way that they have alienated a race of people, you know, or not just a race, but like a population. And they have taken away our writing vote, our votes, our rights to vote. They have taken away our humanity. They have put us under a thumb of society. And, you know, I commend everybody that speaks and lets this be known, because the only way we're going to figure this out is if we expose it for what it is. And, you know, we're going to be shut down. People are going to try to say we're conspiracy theories. We're angry at the system. You know, but the point is, we did our time. We're out here, we're speaking out on it now, and we have a right to be heard just as if anybody else has that right. We have just as much right to speak out against it as those that speak for it. And so that's my take on that. Nice to hear you, Leona.
Thank you.
Leona, are you still with us? I hope this isn't Joe getting on your show, man, and screwing it up like you did Lawrence. And Lawrence, you got to be very careful. Like I tell you stuff in there, you know, I've been in the game long enough to know the system and how they operate. Truthful messages will always get the voice tone, you know, accurate, because we're reaching out to people. And I know I heard Leona say she was going to mute somebody because they had a bunch of noise in the background. That's probably Joe. And Joe did slither his way to talk to her about maybe a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, trying to wash it up to get close to her. And whether she knows it or not, he's going to harm her. It's just a matter of time what he's going to do. That punk, and I'll call him a punk face to face too when I see this clown, I'll call him everything in a book to degrade that man. He's in North Carolina out there trying to run for a seat on the Trump ticket.
Okay. I I have Mariam Jacobs on as a guest today, and we're going to stay focused on some of these issues that are going on. We have a Tuesday show where we can talk about anything and everything, but right now I'd like to hear more from Mariam Jacobs on what Lawrence and also what Maurice had mentioned.
Yeah, I do. I do recognize from what I you know research and read about. I do recognize these what the both of them were explaining. And I think what I want to add is there are laws, there are amendments, there are programs in prison, but you know they are not accessible for common people. And I mean not the rich people and all that. And that's confusing. There are prison rights, for instance, but you know, they are, how do you say it? People cannot reach those rights. You know, there are amendments that are supposed to protect the people, but people cannot reach those amendments. And that makes it confusing because it seems a democracy, but it isn't. It's a totalitarian, you know, a way of totalitarian acting. And that makes it confusing.
Yeah.
And there is this exception of the 13th Amendment, yes, of course, the modern slavery.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how you, when you say that it's confusing, because it is. I mean, how is it that you go and do all this time and it's under the name of justice and you come out and you're told to reintegrate as the norm, as normal society, but yet all your rights are taken away. You're on parole. You have limitations on absolutely every move you make, and you're right. It is confusing. It is very
crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah, and it causes resentment.
Yeah, because you know, I read an article about prison time. It's a complete different reality, and I will not ever understand what you guys have been going through. I can read whatever I want. I can, you know, listen to everybody, but I will not ever know what it means to live in prison time. That's another clock time, and that's also a problem, because we in community, we don't know what it means. If I read an article about somebody has been beaten to death by guards and I see the reaction to that, they are a little bit confused, but yeah, well, it can happen. And I think, is this normalized? You know, people are used to all this violence, and that confuses me maybe more than the fact that it happens. We are getting used to all this. We accept it. And there is this ignorance in communities. People have to know. People have to know this is crazy. It's crazy that you have to fear for your life in a prison system. It's a world upside down. And, you know...
Yeah.
There is this, and that's important. What I also discovered is this manipulation of prison-related terms, like the word discipline or correction. I looked it up. I looked up in a dictionary. What does it mean, the word correction? Correction can mean rehabilitation, but it also can mean punishment. So what does the system do? It uses this one term to the world as a way of rehabilitation. So the community is like, oh, that's great. So they don't protest and they keep quiet. But inside the prison, the same word is used for suppression, violence, and dehumanization. It's a smart game. And that's the same with the term discipline. You know, we all need discipline to reach our personal goals. If I have no discipline, I will not graduate, for instance. But in the system, the same word discipline means that you have to, you know, become obedient. You have to obey the orders. You are not allowed to think for yourself. That's a complete different explanation of the same term. And that's also confusing, because people in community who are ignorant, who does not know enough about the system, they think, hey, it's good that people get disciplined in the system, because then they get rehabilitated and they get prepared for release. But they don't know what discipline means in the system, how it's used. All these things they form, together with the huge bureaucracy, they form this thick wall, and behind that wall, everything can move on and on and on. And on the other side, there are so many people who try to reform. You know, it's this wall of mist, of fog, that's between these two realities. And it's a smart, smart political game of manipulation. It's pure manipulation.
You know what I see lacking in this country is that we have, I'm going to say this again, we have the American Psychological Association. We have the American Psychiatric Association. We have American Civil Liberties Union. We have a lot of these people who talk so much. I just found out that the director of the ACLU, one of them is going to be leaving his tenure because he's planning on running for a political position. He's planning on running for a political position. So this is what we have. We have politicians, legislative members, we have ACLU, we have American, all the people that can come together and work on the solutions to all of these problems going on within the penal system. But what happens is we have them all only on their time when they want votes or when they want some people to focus on what their agenda is. Do they come out like flies coming out off the wall? The problem in this country is that people don't come together. We know the problem in the prisons, as Maurice and Lawrence was saying, and probably others. They go into prison because they came from problematic backgrounds, painful, painful backgrounds. They go into prison because they committed an offense. Instead of society or instead of the penal system, the Department of Corrections or the courts or the judges or all these big shots coming up with solutions and trying to figure out why they really failed, why they stumbled, and let's have these coalitions at the courthouse to try to work on solutions before even sentencing them. Instead, they put them in prison. And it's that simple. Just throw them in like cattle.
And that's what I like about Miriam. What we've adopted at Legacy is we don't focus on the crime that was committed. We focus on why the crime was committed. We look into the background of the participant in the program, and we figure out root causes. We figure out, we connect the dots to his or her childhood. And, you know, most of the people, just a fun fact, most of the people that go into being incarcerated, they go in with a third grade level of understanding. So because of the upbringing, it's a lower middle class. And what ends up happening is you got all these lawyers and these people that have gone to school for 20 years, 30 years, and made careers out of this stuff, and they take advantage of the third grader that's sitting there in that chair, and because he's 30, 20, 40 years old, they treat him as such. And I love her philosophy on looking into why a crime is committed rather than what crime was committed. And I think that when the approach, if we did that, we would have more insight and there would be one less crime, one less victim. But until that we break down the system where it's not so lucrative and each person is not worth $100,000 a year, this is never going to get resolved because it's a conflict of interest. The people that are running it are running it. It's the people that should be overseeing it, the people that should be invested in this is the community or the people or the family members. But they have this thing when somebody goes away, they're out of sight, out of mind. And, you know, like Marion was saying, that they beat us in there. They break us down mentally, physically, and spiritually. And so the only thing we know is that life is the only thing that we understand, the only thing we can conceive. And so when we get out, our go-to is just go back to prison and sit on a bunk. And, yeah, there's programs in there. But those programs are so difficult to get into.
Exactly.
They're running those programs. They're feeding us the bullshit that they want to feed us. They're limiting us. If I went into the reentry program, the transition class that they make you go 6 months before you go home, there's nothing in that class that has taught me anything out here that I'm experiencing. And so that's why I say, you know, it takes a soldier that's been there to lead this charge out here and to get the coalitions and everybody else around us to lead this charge. Until we break down that we're worth money, you take away an inmate and they say they're only worth $100 a day. I guarantee you they'll be shutting down the prisons. But until then, this is, you know, and that's why what I focus on in legacy programs is just to keep us out successfully and permanently. I want to mess up that count. I don't want my brother or my sister going back even for 6 months for a violation. I will bend over backwards to keep him or her out. And if we had more people that would accept that philosophy and invest into our brothers and our sisters, we would be investing into a gold mine. We would be taking money from them and keeping it in the community. We would be taking the knowledge and giving it back to the community, to the children that are witnessing this and that are seeing that we're for each other and that this is the gang that we want to belong to. These are the people that I want to belong to. These are the people I want to support. And instead, they've taken away it takes a village out of our vocabulary. And that's all I got to say. Sorry.
Can I just say one thing, Lawrence? You mentioned it takes a village. I'm going to go back to this petition that I started almost a year ago, a petition to replace prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities for substances, for anger management, for mental illnesses, whatever the case may be. If they replace the prisons with long-term residential treatment facilities, and it doesn't have to be for 2 years or five, it could be for 10 or 15 or even 20 or maximum 25, as Marion mentioned. And there were programs like your program and other programs out there to work with them while they were in these residential treatment facilities. Think about the progress that they would make. Think about the benefits that would be for the community as well as those people. But the thing is, we have lawyers who are taking advantage of the wealthy and indigent people. Those that have money, they get a lot of money from. The indigent can't get lawyers because they don't have the money. People in the society that complain so much about their loved ones being inside have not even signed that petition. So it can't be that they want their loved ones out that bad if they don't even want to see them getting into a residential treatment facility. So we have people that are their own problems that are causing problems for others as well. But when these people that are running these law firms and these civil rights organizations and prison legal services and things like that, that are picking and choosing who they want to help because they either know the person or they know the person's friends or they know the person's financial status or they know a lot of things. And you see these people that aren't even helping the prisoners because the prisoners are indigent. The prisoners don't know who they know. They're not connected. And I'm sure that you have seen that. I'm sure anyone that's been incarcerated can confirm that as well. And please do.
Oh, yeah. And I'm going to give you a little insight on the people, how poor we live in there. $100 can feed you for 3 months in there. $100.
That's crazy.
That's how poor we live. A $20 money order is gold. $30, $40, if you could get even $50 a month, you're blessed. $150 package will last you 3 months in there. That's how we live.
Can I add something really fast before I lose track of my mind of it? These programs that are mentioned, you know, we're the state that I'm in right now in Montana, they're not going to be recognized, you know, maybe after the fact, you know, even then, it's going to take a process, and in that process, it's going to take 6 to a year, and if that's in good behavior. That's talking about not any kind of write-up to be an outside source for us to go to. White Buffalo has a program in Wyoming, where I'm from, trying to get into that or get treatment from that situation was I basically discharged my sentence before I even got a word back in that whole scenario. My point is when I was 19, I committed a crime, assault with a weapon. I was very young. I had the money. My tribe actually felt like there was things that were kind of not right in this case, in which they were. Anyways, we did get a lawyer. Now, this is how bad and how we fight like racism and we fight injustice. This is how bad it was for myself. We were able to get a lawyer. a lawyer that was worth $7,000. And even then, with this lawyer, we went from poor to actually having a chance at justice here. I was given 7 years of Montana State Prison. They didn't give me a chance for, community placements because there's the process. There's DOC. That means you can go anywhere in the system. You can go to a pre-release halfway house. You can go to the streets, ankle monitor. You can, go to treatment, then to a halfway house. There's all these options for me before prison. For me, they decided that I needed to go to the Montana State Prison committed for 7 years. I did 5.5 years of that. My first violation, I was at a bar parking lot, not drinking. I went back for 6 months in a lockdown treatment facility. After that, I finished 3 months on probation. I didn't change my address. They violated me. I did my last year in Shelby, Montana. Okay, now that's that. In that time, you're supposed to register as a violent offender. I did not register, they said. Okay, they waited till I discharged, then they filed for a failure to register. So they gave me 2 more years after that. I did my 2 years on probation. I moved to Wyoming. Now, what you're supposed to do is you're supposed to go to the sheriff's office, let them know you're leaving the state, and write a letter, which I did. So I moved to Wyoming. Now, listen, in Wyoming, they don't have any kind of violent offender registry, only sex offender registry. I moved there for 2 years. I'm working. I'm living a life. I come back to visit my son, who was in Missoula, Montana. We're at the house. There's a house party next door. We're outside. No big deal. My name gets ran. I don't have a problem. I give my ID up. You have a warrant for a failure to register again, saying that I didn't send a letter after 6 months when I was already living in Wyoming for 2 years. Okay. They gave me 5 years for that. I just now finished 5 years for them just now on that alone. I did that time. Half of it was in jail. Half of it was on the street. I discharged that this last year. Almost a year ago in October, a year ago now. They charged me again for failure to register one more time, and I'm fighting that right now. I went to Wyoming on my probation officer's word, saying I can go. I had a fight with my fiance. We broke up. She actually moved out of that house without telling me. In that time, I was in Wyoming. I did get in trouble, and I was extradited back. They didn't tell me I was charged with anything for another year and a half later. And this is what I'm facing right now. Now, the original crime was assault with a weapon. Nobody was hurt, brought up. There was a gun around, and there was a lot of things, but nobody was hurt. Still, somebody had to pay. I understand. I did my time for that. I'm 40 years old. This happened when I was 19. Since that time, I had one assault, and that was with a neighbor, and that wasn't an assault. It was an argument. Since then, I had 2 DUIs. One, I was parked in a parked car in the passenger side. I still was charged. Okay. So since then, they monitor me because I've committed a violent crime. I have not committed a violent crime in those years, in 20-something years. And yet, right now, at 40 years old, in Helena, Montana, they're sitting there trying to find another way to give me 5 more years. Public defender I fired about a month ago was on a track to say, well, how many years do you want here, basically, was what he was telling me. What can we do for you for the years that we can get for you? What are you comfortable with? Are you working? Do you have a family? Is it okay if you go sit in treatment? Those are the options they were giving me. Not about this injustice of why are you still messing with me. When I committed the crime when I was 19, I did my time for that. And now you're chasing me around because I failed to send a letter to Montana when I was living in Wyoming.
It goes to show you.
And they're giving me years for that.
It goes to show It goes to show you that the government leaders don't know what they're doing, because you know what? When they do release people, these people coming out of prison have trouble getting jobs because of Corey's. Instead of trying to, once they serve their time, scrap the Corey's, seal the Corey's, help them with resumes, help them with finding jobs, help them to get situated. But no, they don't do anything for these people, for any of you inside. And then when you finally do get out, if you're fortunate enough to get out, you're coming out with nothing. They don't help even to try to find housing or try to find supportive aftercare resources, transitional housing, counseling, higher education. They don't try to help. So why in the world are people so afraid to sign a petition to do away with these prisons and start doing something positive by replacing them with long-term residential treatment facilities while at the same time having all these programs, these people that have founded all these programs to help to come into these residential facilities and try to work with them, try to career centers, whatever. But what is the prison doing for anybody but causing people to commit suicide or causing them to die or beating them, abusing them, depriving them, provoking them, harassing them, tormenting, torturing? Why are we sitting back allowing these to happen? We have a society out there that complains. That's all they are about, kids complaining, instead of getting their acts together and actually doing something about it. And some of these victims, I'm sorry to say it, but some of these victims are the causes of people being incarcerated. And that's our society out there, too. Not willing to do anything until something happens.
And you're absolutely right, Leona. I mean, that's just how it is. Nobody cares until it happens to them, and then they need help. You know, after when you talk about what the system's doing, I served a 20-year sentence since the age of 18, was released this last year, and I was released homeless. When I sat there crying in my parole office, asking my parole officer, can I at least get a place to stay for 2 weeks to get on my feet? I'll figure something out. He told me that they're not going to give me anything. He told me I could live under a bridge. And then they still made me come check in. I was 2 hours away from my parole office because they didn't have one in my county, so I had to go to the neighboring parole office. And I said, how am I supposed to get here? And he says, I don't care how you get here. I said, can I get a bus pass? He said, no. And I said, well, what happens if I don't show up? And he said, "And can I call in and let you know I can't make it? And he said, no, you'll be violated. I went through this. I'm very grateful. You know, how do you get out when you're 40 years old and you just served 20 years and you don't know shit about life? I didn't know. I had to have everyone help me with every type of paperwork. It was almost like I was set up from the gate. But the society doesn't do anything, and that has a lot to do with the fear, you know, of the government and the system throwing fear out there. For instance, I had a job that I was working for several months until they found out I was formerly incarcerated and they fired me. And then I went to another job and I was working there and I was doing just fine. They fired me because they found out I was a felon. So, you know, the society is to blame. You know, what I say when I hear something, an injustice, I feel wholeheartedly and with passion that when there is one injustice, it is an injustice to us all. I don't care if you're black, Indian, white, Mexican, it don't matter. If it's a race, if it's a person, if there is an injustice to one, it is an injustice to all. And if until we adopt that, we're going to keep going about our busy lives, not caring about our neighbors, not caring about the youth coming up. We're not going to care about the ones coming home. And that's where we have to change the fear and the bullshit that we've been fed into society, saying that these people are violent, these people are going to commit crimes, and they're going off of paperwork. They're not going off of anything else except for a conviction that I was falsely convicted, and I'm still dealing with this. So how do you sit there and look at somebody without seeing a charge? And that's what society has done. They've taken our names, they've taken our birthdays, they've taken our identities, and they've crushed them into a penal code, into a crime. And until we get out of that and we start bringing the humanity back into the people, when we come home, that's when we'll stay home. But you can't have compassion for somebody that you sit there and think is going to rob you, or somebody that's going to offend against you. And that's the problem, is the society is sitting there telling these people that these men and women are way useless. These people are coming back. Look at the recidivism rate. They only last 6 months and they're going to come back. Why are they feeding the bullshit? Because they want the isolation. They want – it's like an abusive relationship. You isolate the loved one away from their family and they're all yours. They're doing the same thing with us coming out here. They're isolating us from our communities. And our communities are buying into this because they're fed some crap about protect your family. You know, these people are monsters. And you know what? We're not. We're human beings. We're hurt. We need acceptance. We need the love. And you know what? Most importantly, we deserve a second chance, a third chance, a fourth chance. Because when one of us fail, I blame society. The communities are to blame when one of my brothers and sisters goes to prison. And when they go back to prison, there are more to blame because they did nothing but stand by and put this obstacle in front of them so they had no choice but to go back.
And law enforcement and correctional officers, officials, that do all this abusing inside and outside the prison, society, members of society can allow it because it's not happening to them, but they're seeing what's going to be happening. It's now just not with just the minorities. It's not just with the people of color now. You see people of Caucasian that are also being killed, that are also being beaten in those prison settings and in the streets because they're allowing it. People are allowing it to happen. And another thing we have a problem with is the inconsistencies across the board, across the country. If all prisons were run the same, just like in the federal prisons, if all prisons were run the same with the same type of programs, the same everything, because the problems are all the same, but the resolutions are all different. And I, Mariam and Tanupa, one of you, speak on that issue too.
You know, I was trying to get on your show, and basically, you know, I look at your both brothers, you know, Maurice, and I listen to Lawrence. Look, both of you guys, we're going to, this is food for your thought, okay? And me and Marin have a different experience on how we do this. Me, I'm a professor of inmates, Indians, blacks, you name it, okay? I'm a professor of that because it's called human rights. Whatever you all choose to do, okay, I'm going to say this once and for all, and I'm going to get off of Leona's show, and I'm going to allow Leona and all of you to continue your work and your fight. I'm not going to come back on anymore because when I listen to you guys talk, and you're not going to blame the rich that make these papers affirmative to impose it more, then there is no reason to be at each other's throats to describe what's going on. It's going to come to the point in time where our loved ones that are incarcerated are going to get hurt severely, and there's not going to damn thing any of you are going to be able to do about it. This is why these things are important to me, okay? That's why I listen to you guys, and you're not blaming the system of white people. It's a color, people. It's color, okay? Whether you like it or not. And the provision, you know, and even the provision of policies come from the District of Columbia, which people call Washington, D.C., those municipal corporations through legislative branches of officer, you know, officers, whether they're federal judges, magistrate judges, even people in the DOJ, the Department of Justice, okay? They have a routine that they look at the elite's monetary existence, that mammon that flows in every day. They're the ones that are violating your human rights, but none of us collectively can come to conform that and confirm it against them because we're too busy fighting the wrong things. We're not fighting for human rights. You know it and I know it, okay? And those human rights are those people incarcerated. You're all incarcerated today, whether you like it or not. You have a Social Security number. You have a driver's license number. All of it's all numbed into one. So they predict and profess the way administrative agencies work. Look at the young boy just talking about how the state, it's about a formal racism. Let's affirm that. And the lady from across the water, she out there from her own country should be making a bigger stink about this country pushing those against people of color. That's how law offices work in this country because they all become esquires. Now, my final piece to say all of this in good standing, and like I say, I'm going to get off, and I'm not going to come back to this show. I'm going to keep it the way you know it's been. I'm going to let her have her time to keep what she's doing. I've been listening to you guys, but none of you have looked at the color of law as an appearance. That's semblance, folks. And the hard part is, as long as they're going to continue to have people like that punk Joe, Joe's going to come and destroy your show and destroy everything else. That's his game plan. But go ahead. You guys are capable to do what you want. That's why it's hard for us to work together. And concealing that lack of reality, that's a possible exterior, folks. That's the hard part. But you don't want to see that. You don't want to. And that's why brothers and sisters, look at Maurice. Look at Maurice. The racism keeps
making him a threat.
I just want to say
threat. It makes him a threat. Listen, hold on. Like I said, I'm going to get off and you guys can have it. Take a look at Maurice. The state of Wyoming is making him a threat. He's an Indian. He complied. He did it. This is what they want. It's a violation of human rights. My God, you guys, come on. Let's really get to the core of the problem. We don't do that. Miriam can make a big stink in her country. But she's a philosopher. That's what she said. So this is my anger. And I'm sorry I feel this way. But you just did that to me. You kept shutting me down. So I'm gonna be good with it. It's all good. You're still going to be with me regardless.
Not
blame them either. That's the problem, Leona. And they're going to come at you that way. God forbid, okay? Joel keeps coming at you. He's going to change your mindset. You're going to let it go. Lawrence, I hope you do get your show back on and, you know, keep it going, but I am done. You guys don't see the big picture.
We have different shows.
Thank you, guys, and I'll leave it at that. And thank you, Leona, for always being there. You're a good sister. Keep your head up.
I'm going to say one thing. Miriam Jacobs was invited on the show. And if we have guests like this, I mean, people like this to call in, it's too bad. Because one of the things that I've told Chinupa and everybody else, we have a Tuesday show where anybody can call and talk about anything they want. When I invite a guest on the show who is a psychosocial therapist, that is why she's coming on the show, to talk about the damaging effects of this solitary confinement and issues like that. Not to talk about Joe. I don't know who this Joe is, and I could care less. But what I'm saying is I am in agreement with Chinupa in a lot of these things. But Chinupa has to realize when I have a radio show, I have different guests on for different reasons and not just to talk about what he wants to talk about. So if he doesn't plan on coming back again, that's fine with me. But we have an issue in this country, and we have a psychosocial therapist on, and I am so upset with American Psychological Association and all these so-called psychologists and psychiatrists in this country to focus on their patients, on the people they want that are outside those prison walls, when the need is for those who are behind those prison walls. We have a psychosocial therapist that is familiar with the U.S. prisons, that is familiar with the prisons abroad. She is a psychosocial therapist that's telling it like it is. And if we got more courageous people to come on this show from this country here where we live, then maybe we could resolve some issues. We're not going to play the game of I'm going to talk about what I want to talk about when I bring a guest on. And I am glad that Maurice is on. I am glad that Lawrence is on, because these are two people that can actually confirm what Miriam Jacobs is talking about, the damaging effect, the abusive treatment.
May I say something? What I find interesting and what is happening right now is it shows how hard it is to listen to each other and respect different perspectives. We don't need to agree all the time, but at least we can listen to each other and give each other, the space and the room to express, one's own perspective. And what's happening now, and it's very learningful, is how difficult it can be just to listen to each other, whether we agree or not, because the subject of mass incarceration, of what's happening inside the prisons, is very difficult. There are a lot of issues, very nuanced. And instead of fighting each other, we should listen to each other and learn from each other. And
thank
I think
you.
This example of is showing how difficult that is. We have to learn that.
Okay, I have something to say. See, this is why the prison system is doing their job to the T, and why we keep coming back, and why I keep coming back. See, if I have known from the beginning that this was, I know you said that you had a couple of hosts on, and if I guess if I known the subject on hand, the only reason why I chimed in on the incarceration part is I think it was Lawrence was talking about it, or somebody was talking about it, and that's the only reason why I jumped on
no,
that subject.
No, we wanted
I didn't
you on.
Know.
We want
okay.
you on.
So when, no, that's fine. If I'd known it was about incarceration and about the psychology that goes through it, and I would have stayed on point of that because there's so much that is crazy how easy it is for them to manipulate us that way. And listening to everybody in my whole life, I guess, just to learn to shut up and listen, it's an art, you know, and it becomes a true blessing. And then there's a point of what do you really listen to you and what do you not listen to and who's right and who's wrong anymore. And then when it gets to the point where you're so confused about, okay, wow, this is the way the system is telling me to work and live. This is the way society is telling me to live or work. This is how my big brother feels about against the system. This is how other people in different perspectives are feeling about this way. This is how I feel about it, you know? And then so if I approach it on all these different accounts, one man's mission is not mine, you know? And I have to take parts from him, parts from you, parts from them,
exactly.
just to make my standing, my own feet, just to understand. And I'm pulled between the system and everybody else that comes on a side of it because we're all in this in one way or form, good or bad. We're all in this together. And the fact is like being incarcerated and locked down inside of a jail in a prison and the lights, the colors, and the way they mean you, the food rationings, the limits on a phone call, like everything is just, you're not a human, honestly. I deserve to have been in jail for the things I've done. I understand that. But while I was there, not all the time, but there's a lot of times, and I've seen brothers and sisters, not of every color, getting treated horribly, having their visitors come from miles just to get, you know, thrown out. It's affected me to this day. I'm emotionally, like, I really just started talking about my mother, like, on the real, like, honestly about the things that I really thought wasn't a big deal until I started talking about it. And this is the things that was shadowed all those years in prison. This is the things that I probably should have learned before I, you know, had so much anger and violence towards people, you know, and I wouldn't be in a system and I wouldn't have, but I am here now and I see that now. And it's really hard to get back all they took, how many years they took from me to grow, to be a man. I was raised by what, killers and thieves. And I was, you know, just like Lawrence there, you know, there's a lot of brothers like that, you know, that I ran into all my life. They grow up with drugs. Dealers, just, you know, and people that are just violent. And then you grow up with people that change their lives in there, that you see that you can make that change, you know. And once you get to that point where you got everything in control, then you get here, then you thought you had it. You thought you got it. There's always that next person that just,
you know,
makes everything that you believe gone, you know.
There's a scripture in the Bible in Psalms 119:67 that says, I was sinning by mistake. I was sinning by mistake. Trials, what happens is before I was afflicted, I was sinning by mistake. And that's what happens with a lot of people. We make mistakes in life and we learn. We have to learn the hard way. And unfortunately, yeah. People in society, especially our government, They don't believe in it because those mistakes that they made, they were able to get away with it because of
yeah.
the connection, the family and everything. But they don't realize that people make mistakes. And because they make mistakes doesn't mean that they're no good and they should be tossed away and like cattle and forgotten about. And I agree with Chinupa, but my problem is Chinupa, when he says the white man, in all reality, the white man is stereotyping against all whites. And if it wasn't for those whites that have finally seen the truth, seen what the system is, seen what the abuses are, the George Floyd case, like Chinupa always talks about, the white people that have seen it and were disgusted with it themselves, those people are not part of this white man that he's talking about. And if they are, then it shouldn't be. Because we have a lot of good white people in this country.
Yeah, I know the difference, yes.
And I'll tell you, Dr. Mustafa Ansari one time came on the show as a guest with Chinupa because they were talking about uniting all these people of color. Chinupa mentioned something, and I mean, Mustafa Ansari mentioned something, and Chinupa said, I disagree with my brother. I tend to disagree with my brother. He didn't say it in a bad way. He was just disagreeing with what he said. And Dr. Mustafa Ansari he dropped off the show because he didn't want to hear that somebody disagreed with him. And like Marion was saying, if people don't hear, or you were saying, if people don't hear what they want to hear, or they don't hear, they end up like children, they end up backing away. That's the end of it. I don't want to deal with it anymore. Let's face it, we are living in a world where we have to be grown-ups, not children, not bickering back and forth.
I think we also have to understand that racism is a problem in the streets, but in fact it's a tool for rich people and the corporations, because for as long races are fighting each other, they cannot unite and stand up against these big forces, corporal forces that maintain incarceration this way. You know, what I hear now about, you know, what's happening after you get released, there is so much resistance. You are almost, people are fighting against you who want to become, you always have been human, but you want to get rid of the label, the stigma of, you know, the felon, the inmate, which does not exist.
Yeah.
It's only a label. But there is a whole system, not only in the prison system, but also in the community. And I think it's directed by, politics, because, you know, that wants to prevent people who have been in prison, they want to prevent them to succeed again. It's like, you know, you are not allowed to become human again, quote unquote, because you are already human. So please understand it. And that's the whole thing. In all these things, you see that there is a force that maintains incarceration. It's almost like they want you to, you know, they want you to commit another crime, that you have to go back to prison, etc. Why? If the recidivism is high, then parties who benefit from mass incarceration, they can say, see what's happening. We need mass incarceration. We need all these big prisons, because they get out, they make mistakes again, so they have to go back. But it's it's like a game. And I think where it all starts is is dehumanization. It's starting with seeing human beings inside the prison system as objects. It's putting a monetary value to human life. And that's for me, you know, what evil is. When I go in a Dutch prison system and I talk to people who have stolen things, but also who have committed a murder, but when I meet them, they are, you know, they are a human being like I am. This line between them and me is fake, in fact. I don't know how my life will be. Maybe I'm going to commit crime next year. I don't know what's going to happen in my life. I cannot predict my own future.
Exactly.
This line is so thin. And I don't say that I want to take away the responsibility of the incarcerated people I work with. They are responsible, like I am also responsible for the things that I do, you know. But they are equal to me, and I am equal to them. We are human beings meeting each other, and we try to, you know, that's why I try, it happens. I see, when they enter the room, I only see a human being. I don't see a crime. I don't see a bad person or whatever. I don't see a felon. I just see a human being who has the same dreams as I have, the same feelings, the same emotions, you know, the same things. We are all the same race. And that's a human race, you see.
Exactly.
But we have to see that there are parties like corporations who put monetary value on human life. It's the same as, you know, with the United States fighting all these wars in other countries, because the army is privatized, the whole military is privatized. So wars and locking people up, it's good business. Dehumanizing you is good business. It makes money. It's hard to fight that. It's really a very big search how we can make this change with while we understand the game that is played. Do you know the film Schindler's List?
Yeah.
Have you seen it? Have you watched the film Schindler's List?
I've seen the show.
Yeah, it's a film from the film. It's not a show, it's a film about the Holocaust. Did you see
it? Oh, yeah, the film, yeah. Yeah, it's a film, yeah, the movie.
Yeah, Schindler, who saved 1,100 Jews from the concentration camps. I have seen it a couple of times, multiple times, and what I learned from it was that he played the game of the Nazis to reach his own goal. He could not change that game. He could not change the whole Nazi thing, but he understood the game. He understood the system of the Nazis, and he used that system to save his own people, and that were 1,100 Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, when I think of prison reform, then I feel a link between that. We cannot fight this we cannot fight these million-dollar corporations. We can't. We can't.
Yeah.
But we have to see this game, and we have to try to find out how can we make changes with while we are aware that we cannot change the whole corporal system. And I believe it can be done, but I believe it is a whole puzzle. And it starts with awareness, because ignorance is deadly. That's the same as what you see in communities. Communities are often ignorant of what happens into the prison system and after prison system, after release. And politics, the neoliberal politics and the corporations, they use this ignorance to reach their goal, and that's making money. So ignorance of the people, racism, it's all tools to keep people fighting each other, judging each other, and that makes money. And that's the start of, you know, seeing what is going on in real, without all these emotions. My book will be written very rationally, with facts, without emotions.
This is what I was going to say. We have about 2.5 minutes. So, Mariam, can you talk about how people can get in contact with you, your book and everything? And, Lawrence, you might want to talk about your show, when it's going to be on again. Please, I just want everyone to realize we need to stop stereotyping. The prisoners are always stereotyped, which I despise. So we need to stop stereotyping races. But go ahead real quickly, Mariam, finish what you were saying, and I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay, I try to say it calm. My website is www.deeperjustice.com. I'm on Facebook, and I have a Facebook page, Deeper Justice. My email is mariamjacobs67@gmail.com. I'm also on LinkedIn, and I am on Instagram. Yes, I had to think about it. And I hope to release this book, and the only thing that I hope to do is try to contribute to a little bit of, you know, a little bit more awareness of what is happening, what are the roots of mass incarceration.
Thank you.
But I am modest in it, so I will see.
Awesome. You are amazing at it, and you can find me legacyprograms.net. Also on my Gmail is lawrencedrink@gmail.com, LawrenceDrenk. And I'm also on LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook. You can find our groups, Our Legacy, Each One Teach One, as well as Legacy Programs.
And your radio show?
Thank you.
Sunday?
Oh, I'm sorry. Every Sunday at 12:30 Pacific Time. Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light.
Any others?
That's it.
Okay, Maurice. Lawrence, I'd like to have you back on again sometime when Mariam's on, because I think what your experiences are and what Mariam talks about all the time coincides. And these are situations that need to be brought to light.
Always.
Mariel, I want to thank you again for being on. I'm sorry that Chinupa was upset and left early, but I agree with Chinupa in so many ways. It's just that when we talk about some of this, I don't want him to feel that these, every time I have a show, we have to discuss this one particular person. And I believe this one particular person just came on, but we don't have time to hear what he has to say. So I'm going to be ending this episode now. Thank you all for being on.
Thank you all.
Nice to meet you all. Nice to meet you all, too.
Thank you.
Keep doing what you're doing, Miriam.
Yeah.
Okay, all right, brother. Take care. Bye, y'all.
Bye-bye, y'all.